You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
PC 120, or Plan Change 120, was announced for Auckland as a way to boost housing intensification along public transport networks and in the CBD. The plan was celebrated as a way to ensure Auckland remains livable as a city into the 21st century, reducing traffic around key centres and increasing affordability. The plan was met with criticism from those living in affected central neighbourhoods, such as Mount Eden, Parnell, Ponsonby and Epsom. Some residents say the changes will diminish the character of their neighbourhoods or make things busier, disturbing their way of life. Intensification is difficult, therefore, as a balancing act between multiple parties. To discuss how developments can work as we move into a city fit for the 21st century, I spoke to Dr. Mohsin Mohammadzadeh from the University of Auckland School of Architecture and Planning. On PC 120, I guess for anyone who's unfamiliar with what the plan looks like at the start, why is it being put in place, and what does the plan at a very basic level aim to do?
It's a very good question. The thing is that we are growing, you know, as a city, and obviously the demography is changing, and also, you know, the growing means actually we need to provide more houses, you know, and it's kind of the challenge all the time for us, you know, as a planners, you know, to think about it, how we can manage it, you know. So there are a couple of the solutions, you know, and sometimes we have a greenfield development, so we release land and, you know, just build in, you know, kind of the new, and build a new neighborhood or town close to the city. But it's quite costly, especially in the long term. It's not quite sustainable sometimes. We are using most of the time fertile land, you know, to convert it to a kind of the residential, and in the long term we cannot bring it back.
Right. Yeah.
And we have a very limited resources about this one. And also, it's kind of the thing, it increases the cost in the long term, especially for the transportation and infrastructure. Mm. Because most of the time when we going for a greenfield development, we are aiming for a kind of the low density type of developments over there. And we develop the infrastructure based on that low dense ones. So it's long term, when we expand the city, very low dense, transportation, providing transportation, especially public transport, it becomes so expensive, for example, for a council, for Auckland Transport now is a part of the council. So it associates with some costs, and also it will be costly for people. If we don't go for public transport, we'll have more traffic. As planners, we have another option, which is kind of the brownfield or kind of the infill development type of things, you know, intensification within the metropolitan area, you know, and it's one of the solutions. We are going for townhouses, apartments, and a different range.
Right.
But again, you know, obviously we are facing another type of issues. One of the limitations is the existing infrastructure, the capacity of existing infrastructure, like water or the network, the, you know, transportation network there. Sometimes it's a kind of limitation, and also characteristics of the neighborhoods,
yeah.
You know, and especially for people, you know, living in that area, you know, they somehow, they have a concern,
yeah.
You know, because if we don't plan it well, I totally understand what people think, you know, if we don't plan it and put it in the right place, potentially can kind of adversely impact on the quality of life of people over there. So, yeah, it's a kind of the things all the time we are dealing with this kind of the criteria. So, yes, the plan aims actually to provide the kind of the houses that we really need, you know, and we know that housing all the time, at least, you know, for decades, it was a kind of a major concern, especially for a younger generation. So, yeah, the plan aims actually to provide more options, especially for the younger ones, for the new demography we have, and the different type of needs, instead of the standalone houses in the, you know, in the new developed areas.
Because we see with these standalone houses and with this model that Auckland's been, instead of expanding upward, we've been sort of broadening outwards south and especially up north, you know, into those neighbourhoods there. There's been some criticism of this, that it causes some kind of problems. You hinted towards transport. Is there anything else that, any other problems that this creates from a planning perspective?
As I mentioned, you know, the first thing is that we are using our fertile land actually to convert it to the residential.
Yeah.
So we have very limited. People assume that, you know, land is available, you mm-hmm. know, because they can see it.
Yeah.
The reality is that fertile land is quite a rare resource, you know, so mm-hmm. it's quite, we need to protect it. It's a first thing. So most of the time, we are using that kind of fertile lands actually for residential.
Yeah.
The other thing is that if you look to the long, as I mentioned, long term, you know, because we develop them for the based on the low density again, in the long term, we'll not have enough capacity actually to intensify that kind of neighborhood. So it means that the process of growing means that we are all the time going for the greenfield development.
Mm.
Obviously, for some groups, it's created kind of the benefits. We understand it. It's a kind of the money issue. But in the long term, I don't think it would be quite beneficial, you know, for a city, because especially the cost of the operation, infrastructure, providing that kind of service, quality service for people. And also somehow, I think it would be quite expensive for the younger generation, because most of those kind of buildings, they are quite big. They are 4 or 5 bedrooms, and they are not designed for the young ones. And especially for the young ones, they are working in the CBD or other, you know, kind of the, name it, kind of job hubs, you know.
Mm.
They are quite far from them. So it means that the young ones, they should pay for the house, but also they should pay for transportation.
Yeah.
You know, so it makes it quite unaffordable for the younger ones. When we put things together, it's a kind of the things we have it in Europe and also in Australia these days. You know, we are going for more intensification within their, you know, urban areas, especially to provide more opportunities. You know, townhouses, different types. You know, it's quite to respond to the different needs of the people, not just big houses with 4 or 5 bedrooms.
Yeah,
we've had traditionally.
Yeah, that seems to be a big thing in terms of developing these plans, you know, loosening restrictions around some of these central city suburbs, Ponsonby, Mount Eden, Parnell, Epsom, these places, because young people are some of the biggest users of these central city, or certainly the biggest commuters into these central city places for university, for work, as you mentioned. If we're thinking about increasing or intensifying in these neighbourhoods, what kind of benefits could it pose for younger communities looking to break into the housing market, looking to find a place to live?
Very good question. The thing is that actually most of the developments we have, intensification within this kind of the inner suburbs, we name them, you know, there are like a townhouses, apartments, which is more affordable for renting and also for ownership. And also the other thing is that because they are quite inner, we have more frequent public transport, better access to the facilities, easier and cheaper, especially for the young ones if they are commuting to the city or other centers like Newmarket or other places. We have a lot of job opportunities. So it would be more affordable for young ones, you know, and also I think, even regarding commuting, it would be less traffic, you know, in the city, because when people actually travel less, means that actually they stuck less in the traffic. So, and obviously reduce the cost. But I totally understand, you know, the concerns of the people who are already living in this kind of the areas, because they have characteristics, you know, and there are very kind of the high demand for people to leave that because of the quality of the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
If we don't consider the needs of the people and characteristics of the neighborhoods, and we just intensify it, and we don't consider the limitations of existing infrastructure over there, and also the characteristics, this kind of neighborhoods potentially losing their characters and also the quality of life.
Right.
Yeah. I think so most of the time people misunderstood, people when discuss about misunderstood about the concerns of people there.
Yeah.
In that case, I think, you know, it's a very complex. We need to consider the needs of the youth, obviously, and what's benefit for the city. But at the same time, we need to consider a couple of the other things. And colleagues, for example, we have the School of Architecture and Planning and Design. We have Heritage team over there. And they are considering how the characteristics can be maintained, you know, and somehow. And also we have Urban Design Group. You know, they look to the how we can shape this kind of the new development aligns with what we already have.
Yeah.
So intensification, perfect, but we need to do it, you know, wisely and carefully.
Balance.
Yes, absolutely. To respond to the needs of all people, you know.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to ask is, We have seen quite a few apartment buildings pop up in the last, 5 to 10 years, but they don't tend to be concentrated around the CBD. They tend to be, cropping up in these outer city suburbs and even further out. And people have criticised this for creating traffic issues, creating pressure on schools, creating other problems there. Is this something we can continue doing alongside intensification, or what is the scale of this as a thing we're doing?
Very good point. Yes, we can see the intensification apartments, in the not necessarily around the, metropolitan centers and town centers. There's a reason, because of the land value.
Right.
If you want to build a kind of the couple of the houses as a attached townhouses, or if we want to go for apartment, you should have a kind of the big block, the piece of land. Right. And when that kind of lands are quite close to kind of the metropolitan centers or town centers, the land value is quite, expensive. So sometimes developers actually select a piece of land that are not necessarily close to that kind of amenities. So it dictates by the land value. We have a couple of the colleagues working, in the school, and also, as I know, in the business school, are working in that kind of area. So, and how the land value somehow directs that kind of the developments. But at the same time, we know that, when we open up a kind of particular area, for example, for intensification, land value automatically increase significantly. Because when you permit for the intensification, the land value increases automatically without any kind of, by the plan itself, So somehow it's perceived as a kind of the obstacles, for the developers especially. Yeah, it's a kind of very complex, very complex issue, So we need to consider a range of things. And also, I agree, in some aspects, we need to check this, And sometimes I think people forget. When we are going for intensification, we need to check the capacity of existing infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Does, for example, the roads and network we have over there can accept that level of the, pressure? Increasing the number, because when you build houses, and people start living there, it creates a kind of the commuting, people traveling, on roads.
Yeah.
Do you have a capacity for it? For example, the other one, sewage system is working or not for that number of people, or the water pipes, the system can offer that level of the water. We have a lot of examples around the world when planners, they just think about the beneficial and economic dimension and ignore that kind of the foundation of the intensification. And then at that kind of, when the project materializes and built, the quality of the space dropped significantly.
Yeah.
So it's a very complex multi-layer things, engineering, economics, politics, social cultural ones.
You mentioned the cities that we see in Europe with this intensification style are very close around urban centres, and now that we're seeing in Australia as well. Do you think we'll ever see something like that for Auckland? I think it's possible.
To be honest, it's the only way we can, I think, the most feasible and appropriate way to accommodate people. We have a young generation. We have a kind of the new type of needs in the city, and we need to place them. And we need to consider their needs. But yes, it's a kind of, as a planner all the time, we consider that, what's the socio-cultural, economic dynamics over there, how we can provide the best service, for people, and also create a good urban, kind of spaces to respond to the needs of all people.
Yeah.
So I think it's inevitable, but how we plan it and how we implement it, it's a big question.
That was Dr. Mohsin Mohammadzadeh from the University of Auckland School of Architecture and Planning, talking about how to make Auckland a city for the 21st century and balancing multiple parties around intensification. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.